Tonight was one of the biggest SmackDowns of the entire year. They were live from Madison Square Garden, right in my backyard. I was not there, because I am here with you now, live here on YouTube. But they even used a smaller stage tonight. Over 17,000 people inside Madison Square Garden for tonight's show. They were there to fit as many people in as they possibly could, which is my philosophy too. If you can fit the maximum number of people in the building, why run some gigantic stage? Get as many people in the building as you possibly can. They were packed. Nick Khan was said to be there. Stephanie McMahon. There were photos floating around of her spotted in the front row as well. We even got a Knicks and Pacers rematch here on the show. We had Jalen Brunson. And we had Tyrese Halliburton. They had a little face-off as well on SmackDown tonight. A lot of people on the show. It was also Kayla Braxton's final night. They only gave her one segment on the entire show. And it was very brief. It was a very quick blink and you missed it backstage segment involving Nick Aldis, who wouldn't even talk to her, wouldn't even answer her question because there was so much going on. That was it for Kayla Braxton. Not a very memorable appearance, but nonetheless, she got to work her final show at Madison Square Garden, which, you know, look, if you're going to go out and you're going to work your final night, MSG, not the worst place in the world for your final show. But let's talk about, right off the bat here, this closing segment, because it's all about how you start and how you finish. They started hot and they finished hot on what was an excellent episode of SmackDown tonight. I had a lot of fun watching this show, but it was all about the bloodline ceremony that they saved for the very end. All we knew coming into this show tonight was that there was going to be what they were referring to as a bloodline acknowledgement ceremony. We didn't know what that meant. But of course, last week on the show, we had Jacob Fatu, finally, at long last, making his debut in WWE. Been waiting years to see this man in a WWE ring. He looked great. He was on the show tonight as well, his Madison Square Garden debut for Jacob Fatu. I'm so fucking happy for that guy. You know how long he's been waiting for this opportunity? He came out tonight, he got his own entrance, he got new music. He's already looking like a star, more so even than Solo Sikoa, and I have to give them praise, because one of the criticisms that I've had is that Solo Sikoa just does not come across as a leader. You know, we're supposed to take him as a leader now for this new bloodline. They're setting up for Roman against Solo when Roman eventually comes back. Then you bring in Jacob Fatu, and Jacob Fatu, he just has that intangible. He has that it factor. And you put him next to Solo Sikoa, and you ask anybody, which one of these two looks like the bigger star? Which one of these two looks like a real leader? Jacob Fatu is going to win in that argument 9 times out of 10, right? He just looks the part. Solo looks like he's trying to play the part, but he's not really fully there yet. Tonight may have been the best that Solo Sikoa has looked in the role as bloodline leader. He was assertive. He was loud. He was yelling at Heyman at one point. I thought that he looked as good in that role tonight as he has at any other point up to now. But what it was he brought out Jacob Fatu, and he had them go around the horn from Tama Tonga to Tonga Loa to Jacob Fatu. They would step forward, and they would acknowledge Solo Sikoa, who thinks he's Roman Reigns now. And then he would turn to Paul Heyman. And this was all about having Paul Heyman acknowledge him as his tribal chief. And he even had the Ula Fala. He had the necklace. And Paul Heyman, man, you know, I've been putting this guy over for so long. All the bloodline segments since WrestleMania that have not really been hitting for me. And it started to really drag. And I said, the one thing that's holding this thing together is Paul Heyman. Paul Heyman is tremendous in this role. He is just fucking fantastic. And he knows exactly how to sell it just with his facial expressions. He'll show up tonight, for example. He's looking a little rough because that's what the story calls for. He's out there. He's got the scruff on his face. He doesn't look healthy. Okay? He doesn't look healthy. He's out there. He looks like he's seen some shit. And this guy has to acknowledge Solo Sikoa, and he refused to do so. This was the big payoff to the angle here tonight. He refused to acknowledge this man. And the reaction from the crowd in Madison Square Garden when he did that, when he refused to do it, was unreal. Unreal. You remember when Sami Zayn hit Roman Reigns in the back with a chair at the Royal Rumble last year? How loud that fucking crowd was. That's the kind of reaction that we got tonight from Paul Heyman refusing to acknowledge Solo Sikoa. And he did so knowing what the consequences of those actions would be. This is a man who accepted his fate. And Paul Heyman took a bump. He took multiple bumps. He took three bumps, which is three more than he usually takes. He doesn't look like he should be out there taking bumps, but he took three of them in this segment and ended up laid out at the very end. And we'll get into exactly what happened and what they did to this guy. But that final shot of the new bloodline, Solo's bloodline, standing over the broken, fallen body of Paul Heyman, as people chanted for Roman Reigns, "We want Roman." When Roman Reigns finally does come back, whether it's Money in the Bank next weekend, which seems unlikely at this point, SummerSlam seems more likely, but whenever it is that Roman Reigns comes back, and he'll likely have Paul Heyman with him the night that he comes back, the reaction, wherever they are, whether it's a stadium, whether it's an arena, is going to just out, it's going to blow the roof off the place, even if the place doesn't even have a roof. It's all been building to this moment. And we're getting closer and closer and closer. And the addition of Jacob Fatu adds a whole new dimension to this. I mean, just looking at him out there and the way he's in the ring, pacing back and forth, you know, he looks like a scary SOB. They call him the werewolf, the Samoan werewolf, right? It's a name that fits him. It suits him very well. But this was the best that this new bloodline has looked since Solo formed this new faction. Fatu has a very big part to play in that. But I thought that show closing angle and what it is setting up for was fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. I thought that was great. We also, on the show, we had a series of Money in the Bank qualifying matches, two for the women, one for the men. We'll get into who is moving on to Toronto and who is not. But there is one, unfortunately, you know, for all the positive things I can say about this show tonight, and there was a lot to like about SmackDown, I also have to say this. I think the only thing I am looking forward to more than Raw moving to Netflix is SmackDown getting the fuck off of Fox and moving back to USA. See, if you want to get the full Fox experience tonight, there you go. There you go. That's the Fox experience. See that black screen? How many times do we have to sit through this tonight watching this show? Muting and random blackouts all night long. Here, this is the full Fox experience for you. Fuck Fox. You know, it's one thing to have the crowd chanting, "Fuck you, Solo," or "Fuck you, this person or that person," and they mute the crowd. See, that I understand. There are certain things that the crowd may chant, and it's like, all right, you know, FCC violation or whatever, you got to mute the audio. What is with the constant blackouts on screen? Is there a woman in the crowd showing her tits, pulling her top down? Is somebody mooning the crowd? What is going on that we need so many blackouts on the show? The muting is bad enough. Just at random, seemingly random moments where you wouldn't expect that there's anything happening in the crowd that would necessitate something like this. I mean, they fucking butchered this show tonight, and I still enjoyed the show in spite of it. But holy shit, this is as bad as I've ever seen it. This network sucks. Quicker they get this show off Fox, the better. How many more months? September, right? I think September this show moves. Yeah, it can't come soon enough. There you go. This is your Friday Night SmackDown review for June 28th, 2024. I am the Solemn Monster. Hey, there I am. It is good to have all of you. Let's go through this show. We got a recap at the very beginning of the show tonight of Jacob Fatu's debut from last week, his excellent debut on SmackDown. Look, there was a lot to like about WWE television last week. That was the strongest week of WWE TV all year. We had the Wyatt Six, right, debuting on Raw. And I thought Jacob Fatu's debut was even better than that. As great as that was, the presentation of that, I thought Jacob Fatu's debut was pitch perfect last week. You want to introduce somebody in a dominant way, in a memorable way, in an impactful way? That's how you debut somebody. Laying out Cody Rhodes, laying out Randy Orton, laying out Kevin Owens, three of the top baby faces in this company, not only on this brand, but in this company. And laying them out in the way that he did, it was fantastic. So we got a recap of everything that happened there at the end of the show last week. And then we come back live, and we see a shot of the Bloodline arriving in their SUV out in the parking garage. Paul Heyman is already there, and he's standing there, and he's waiting for them to exit the vehicle. And Heyman asks them, where is Jacob Fatu? And Solo didn't answer him. Instead, they all, including Heyman, walk through Gorilla into the arena. They didn't get very far. They had just gotten through the, I guess there's no curtain there technically anymore when they first walk out, but they got through the curtain. They were on stage, and then we got a shot in the back. Guess who else arrived at the building? Cody Rhodes, Randy Orton, Kevin Owens, not very happy about what happened at the end of the show last week. You know, normally we see Cody Rhodes, he shows up on these shows, got a big smile on his face, right? Right. Hey, how's it going, man? Hey, good to see you. Hey, let me sign an autograph for you, right? No, no smile, no autograph, no handing the belt, the weight belt to somebody else, no pyro, no whoa, none of that. They're pissed off after what happened at the end of the show last week, as they should be, and they show them coming into the building. The Bloodline sees this, and now they're all alarmed. So they stop in their tracks, and they're standing there, and they're waiting for the baby faces to come out, and there they are. And we got ourselves a giant brawl to open the show tonight. Randy Orton, he brawls with Tama Tonga down to ringside. Kevin Owens got Tonga Loa laid out there in the crowd. And he got Tonga Loa laid out on a table. Owens then walks up a little flight of stairs. And he gets up on the railing. Hits a Swanton bomb off the railing down through the table. So they did the boom drop spot that Kofi Kingston did with who else? Randy Orton in this very building back in 2009. I was in the building for that. That's a memorable spot. Kevin Owens did something similar here. Cody and Randy, they disposed of Solo Sikoa out over the top rope when Nick Aldis leads an army of security geeks down to the ring and they go to commercial. Hell of a time to go to commercial here, right? Smart. Keep people watching. Come back from commercial. It was still chaos in the ring. Aldis is trying to get Owens and Orton and Rhodes out of the ring. Instead, they just start beating up security. Randy Orton hits an RKO on one guy. Kevin Owens doles out a few different stunners. Cody Rhodes hit a crossroads on one of these security guys. Sold it perfectly. It looked like he spiked it right on top of his head. So laid him out. Aldis gave up. He just gave up. And they show him, he's walking to the back. So Owens tells the Bloodline if they thought they were just going to wait until Money in the Bank, they're dumber than they look. Orton said the Bloodline put him on the shelf for 18 months. So at Money in the Bank, they put the Bloodline down for good. Cody said the Bloodline sees them and they see three victims. He doesn't see three victims. He sees his friend, Kevin Owens, and a 14-time world champion and first ballot Hall of Famer, a man responsible for him standing here today, the legend killer, Randy Orton. That's who he sees. Here's what else he sees. He sees a sold-out Madison Square Garden, and he says, a crowd like this, I should be defending the WWE Championship against a worthy, credible opponent. We'll come back to that in a second. Instead of fighting a war with the Bloodline that he thought was already finished at WrestleMania. So now here comes Nick Aldis. We were wondering, where was he going, right? Nick Aldis comes back out. This time he's got New York's finest with him in the phoniest looking NYPD uniforms that I've ever seen. Cody looks into the camera and he addresses Solo Sikoa. I don't know where Solo was. I think he was laid out on the floor, but he looks into the camera and he's addressing Solo Sikoa. He says, I don't know why you're calling it the Bloodline. I look at you and I see a seat filler. And the cops finally got all three of the baby faces to leave. This was one hell of a start to this show. because they knew they were going to have a hot crowd. They knew they had a packed house, and they ended with that great angle the week before. So it only made sense to pick up where things left off last week, and you just have these six guys just beating the hell out of each other all over the building. It was a hot way to open the show. They were, like I said, they were pissed off, as they should be, after what happened on last week's show. No Jacob Fatu here at the beginning of the show. And I like that, because look at what happened to the Bloodline here in this segment, right? They all got laid out. Solo got laid out. Tama got laid out. Tongaloa got laid out. You don't want to have Jacob Fatu coming out in week two after that great debut and just getting beaten up and laid out like everybody else. You got to keep him special. You got to protect him. And that's what they did. They did not have him here in the opening segment for that very reason. But let's go back to the line that Cody said about how here we are in a packed, sold-out Madison Square Garden, and I should be here tonight defending the WWE Championship against a worthy, credible challenger. When he said those words, when he made that comment, and the camera was just perfectly positioned right behind Cody in the background, is Randy Orton. And as soon as those words left his mouth, you could see Randy Orton. It's like he perked up, he turned right around, like he snapped around. And he's staring at Cody Rhodes. And he got a look on his face. Eyebrows got raised, right? That was the first thing I noticed. They had Orton in the shot, and he immediately turned around, and he looked at Cody Rhodes. And that is not the first time that that's happened, right? You think back to, was a Clash, right? Clash of the Castle. When the three of them were fighting with the Bloodline, and then there was that shot in the aisleway of Randy Orton. I'm pretty sure it was Clash of the Castle. Looking down at the WWE Championship over Cody's shoulder, staring at the title, right? His eyes were transfixed on that title. And I fucking love when they put things like this, just these little things that some people may not notice, and it seems like a minor thing, but it's there for a reason. And Triple H has been, to his credit, Triple H is very good at this. We see him do this quite a bit. There'll be a backstage segment, interview maybe is going on. You always had to pay attention to what's going on, because down the hallway, in the background, there's some conversation going on with somebody, right? Or somebody's lurking in the shadows. So you have to really pay attention to what's going on here. But it's just, it's those little things like that that I just love. And that match, you know, Cody and Randy, that's the match that should be happening at SummerSlam. You know, if I'm booking things here, just as a matter of putting together a SummerSlam main event and a WWE title match that I think is worthy of a show like that, and the biggest possible title match right now that they could do, that's the match that you do. I mean, that could be a WrestleMania title match, but we're so far away from WrestleMania. The fact they're already teasing it, they're not going to wait that long. And we know Cody and Rock is the direction for next year. But that really should be the match at SummerSlam. And I know Meltzer is saying that the plan right now is Cody and Solo. And you know what? I know Meltzer can be hit or miss lately a lot, but he's probably right on that. That's probably what it's going to end up being. As strong as they're building up Solo Sikoa, and also because it just sets up the return of Roman Reigns. If they want to wait until SummerSlam, I could absolutely see that closing out the show at SummerSlam with Roman coming back at the very end. It could happen that way. But Cody Rhodes and Randy Orton, it's coming. We don't know when, but it's coming. That's the match that they should do. When that RKO, I mean, when he hits that RKO, that RKO is going to hit like crack when that day finally comes. So after a recap of moments ago, we got the one Kayla Braxton segment on this show. She was in the back, in the parking area, trying to ask Nick Aldis about everything that just went down. She got snubbed as Randy Orton, Cody Rhodes, and Kevin Owens were led back to their car to leave the arena. Then we had our first of three Money in the Bank qualifying matches here on this show tonight. Jade Cargill, Tiffany Stratton, and Candice LeRae. Jade caught Tiffany with a super kick early in this match. I mean, it sounded like she just blasted her in the face. Like it made this great sound. And that sent Tiffany out to the floor. She pressed Candice over her head and then tossed her out of the ring onto Tiffany Stratton. This brought out Nia Jax, who comes walking down to the ring. But then right behind her, here comes Bianca Belair. And Bianca's there to ask her, what the hell are you doing out here? You don't belong out here. So they stayed out there for the rest of the match. Nia was stalking Jade on the floor. After Jade missed a corner splash, she fell out of the ring. Here comes Nia. Well, now here comes Bianca. It was funny, too, because Bianca had a very, very gingerly kind of walk over. She was in heels. I don't know how women walk around in these things. I really don't. I would ask, I mean, who? Maybe there's people in the chat who wear high heels. Maybe there's men in the chat who wear high heels. I'm not going to judge. I don't know how you walk around in these things. So she was very gently making her way over to Nia to stop her from doing something. So the referee gets out of the ring. And the referee gets in between the two of them. As this is going on, Jade stands up. Doesn't see that Indy Hartwell has emerged. I don't know where she came from. Out of the crowd, I guess. And Indy Hartwell sends Jade face first into the ring post. In the ring, Candice tried a lion salt. Tiffany, though, got her knees up and then went up for the prettiest moonsault ever. And she got the pin to qualify for Money in the Bank. That is the correct outcome. Tiffany Stratton was the only choice here in this match. And when Bianca Belair lost her match last week, you had to figure that Jade was probably losing hers as well. But there's your Money in the Bank winner if they have any sense about them. Now, Chelsea Green is also in Money in the Bank. And again, they're going to be in Canada. I think Chelsea Green's going to be the automatic babyface in front of those people next Saturday. But the correct winner for Money in the Bank, the woman who should walk out with that briefcase, and I've been saying it for months, and I haven't wavered on this. I still feel the same way. I mean, look, I'm happy for Chelsea. She's in the match. She's going to have her moment. She'll be part of Money in the Bank in Canada, but you know what? Tiffany Stratton is the correct choice to leave with that briefcase. It's been a quiet couple of months for her. It's been weird because she was being pushed pretty well, and then the last couple of months, nothing. And I wonder if that has to do with the fact that they just didn't have anything for her, and they have been waiting for this moment. You know, they have been waiting for her to win the briefcase, and that's why they've been doing nothing with this woman. So it's about time. Jade, meanwhile, she loses nothing from the loss. It's not like she took the pin, right? They had the out with Indy Hartwell interfering, and now they set up a tag team match for TV in Toronto next week, where it will be Jade and Bianca taking on Indy and Candice. And then they also have another match they could do on TV in the next several weeks. They could do Bianca and Jade against Nia and Tiffany. Because there's no pay-per-view. There's no PLE for them to do that match between now and SummerSlam. Like I said, Money in the Bank is already next weekend, but they could do that on TV in a few weeks. You know, Nia and Tiffany have been very friendly of late. So now they have a couple of matches set up for Bianca and Jade. What that means for Bianca and Jade at SummerSlam, I don't know. Because we already know Nia is wrestling Bayley at SummerSlam. So they're not going to do a tag team match on that show. It's hard for me to imagine Bianca and Jade in some meaningless tag team match against who else even is there realistically that they would be wrestling at SummerSlam. I mean, it seems more realistic they would be wrestling each other, but they haven't shot the angle yet. You know, they haven't given any indication of there being any sort of split incoming between them. These next couple of weeks will tell the tale if they drop some kind of hint, but I haven't seen anything. Row, row, Roman Reigns gently down the stream.
Row him.
Row him. Row, row, Roman Reigns gently down the stream.
Oh, he's rowing. He's on his way. See, that I have a theory about this. I think the reason we haven't seen Roman Reigns yet, it's been how many weeks since WrestleMania? He's rowing. He's not taking a car. He's not taking the jet. He's rowing down the stream. That shit takes time. You know, he's doing it old school. It's going to take a while. So I think by SummerSlam, he should pretty much arrive. I think by SummerSlam, we just have to be patient. Meechan was in Nick Aldis's office backstage and asked for a match against Nia Jax. Aldis said he would think about it. And that was good enough for her. She smiled and off she went. The Street Profits and B-Fab showed up. They wanted to fight the Bloodline. Aldis told them no. because he promised the Bloodline time for their acknowledgement ceremony later in the show. Pretty Deadly showed up. I don't know where they've been. I haven't seen them in a while. I didn't even realize they were gone. And I like Pretty Deadly, but I saw them. I go, oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot. They're on this roster. So they showed up, and they made some jokes. We got some comedy. Montez Ford decided they wanted to fight Pretty Deadly instead. We're going to get that match on SmackDown next week. Paul Heyman was in the back with Solo Sikoa. And he told Solo that Cody, Randy, and KO have all been escorted out of the building by the NYPD. And he wanted to know, A, what the hell is happening with the ceremony later, because he had no idea. And B, where the hell is Jacob Fatu? He's scared. He wants to know, where is this man? He doesn't want any surprises. So Solo tells him, look, Fatu's not here. And Fatu is not going to be here tonight. And that's why, he said, you're my wise man. And tonight, we're going to make that official. So that was, he was led to believe that that was the nature of this ceremony later, that they were going to make it official, I guess, and anoint him as his official wise man. That's what he told him anyway. Heyman, as I said earlier at the beginning, Heyman was looking very rough here. What was there? Maybe there was a period of time, and I don't remember exactly what was going on at the time, but Heyman, remember he had like his hair was all gray, and he let, you know, the beard grow out a little bit. He was looking really rough. He's starting to look really rough again. You know, when the angle calls for it, he's like Christian Bale. Christian Bale has done these movies. I forgot the name of the movie. There was one movie he did where he had to lose so much weight. He looked like, seriously, he looked like a refugee. It was ridiculous. And apparently he put some great performance in. And then the very next movie, he could do a superhero movie and bulk up and look like Batman. I mean, that can't be healthy for you. But, you know, the great actors are able to do that. Paul Heyman is no Christian Bale, but when the role calls for it, he knows how to make himself look about 15 years older than he really is. So let's talk about our second Money in the Bank qualifying match of tonight. LA Knight, and I think the best one, LA Knight, Logan Paul, and Santos Escobar. What a fucking pop for LA Knight when they hit his music. Did you see this crowd in Madison Square Garden? They had the crowd shot, and as soon as they hit the opening chords of his music, everybody rose to their feet. They loved LA Knight here in New York. So they showed Jalen Brunson of the New York Knicks in the crowd, and he almost got as big of a pop as LA Knight did. That's how big LA Knight's reaction was. Logan Paul comes out, and he first thing he does is he introduces point guard for the Indiana Pacers, Tyrese Halliburton, who comes out wearing a Tyrese 317 shirt. So you can imagine the heel heat that this got here in the building at Madison. Him of all people walking out here in Madison Square Garden. I would love to tell you more about the reaction that Mr. Halliburton got, but Fox, let's get ready here. Fox blacked out the fucking screen. I guess somebody went streaking in the aisleway as this man walked out. This is what I saw on my screen when Tyrese Halliburton came out. You know, the Pacers, they broke the hearts of every Knicks fan. Not a big NBA guy myself, but, you know, my brother and some friends of mine are big NBA fans, Knicks fans, Nets. Broke the hearts of a lot of Knicks fans here in New York City. But then they got swept by the Celtics. So fuck them. Come down to ringside. Jalen Brunson stands up. He's in the crowd. He's in the front row. And he comes face to face with Halliburton. Got a big reaction here from the crowd. This was a fun match. Escobar and Paul, they fought in the corner. Knight intercepts. They were in the corner and on the top rope. LA Knight, he does that run into the corner. And he leaps up. He leaps up here, lands on the top rope. He grabs a hold of Escobar and delivers an avalanche back suplex. But now he took himself out. So Knight is laid out on the mat. Logan Paul, on the top rope. He follows up with a Swanton bomb onto LA Knight for a very close two count. So now here, this is the finish here, right? The big finale. Logan looks outside the ring and he sees Tyrese Halliburton standing there and he's motioning for him to do something. And Halliburton walks up to one of Logan Paul's friends. I think it's the same friend all the time. What's his name? Jeff or something? I don't know. Douchebag number one. He's in the crowd. He's got the brass knucks. So Halliburton goes over and he gets the brass knucks. Jalen Brunson sees this. Now, you're in his building here. You're in his city. You're in his town. He's not going to stand for this. So Brunson hops over the barricade, trips, lands on his knee, tears out his ACL. Nah, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I just had to give the Knicks fans a little heart attack there. Just a little heart attack. No, he's fine. He's fine. He's fine. Nothing to worry about. He's okay. He hops over the barricade, and he's teasing a fight with Halliburton. And they're not like nose to nose. Like Halliburton's over there, Brunson's over here. Referees come out, and now they're in between them. But the crowd, of course, is stirring because they want to see these two go at it. Meanwhile, in the ring, as this is going on, LA Knight hits Escobar with the BFT, lays him out. Logan Paul sees this. He sneaks up behind LA Knight, rolls him up to try to pin him. Knight, though, rolls through, and he ends up pinning Logan Paul to qualify for Money in the Bank. He pinned the United States champion. I was not expecting that for the finish. After the match, Halliburton and Logan Paul are in the ring, and they are surrounding LA Knight. And Halliburton has the brass knucks on his hand. Jalen Brunson grabs a steel chair from outside the ring. He gets into the ring, stands right next to LA Knight. We've got a face-off here in the middle of the ring. Halliburton and Paul, they think better of it. They back off, which leaves Knight and Brunson in the ring to celebrate together. The fans love this. And they knew they would, right? They set this angle up knowing it would get over here in the Garden. So it worked. They were right. And I was sports entertained. I enjoyed this. I was getting Rodman and Malone WCW vibes here from this. Watching, you know, the four of them standing in the ring together. If you didn't know any better and you watched this segment, you would think they were setting up for a tag team match. Now, of course, neither team would ever allow for this. Because they would be crazy to. But also, when would you even do it? There's no time to do it. The pay-per-view is already next weekend, and LA Knight already has a match, and then the next big show is SummerSlam. And no doubt, Logan Paul will be defending the title against LA Knight on that show. So, you know, it's not even like they have a PLE coming up where they want a big attraction and, you know, look. In today's day and age in WWE, with all the celebrities they bring in, Logan Paul was brought in as a celebrity. And whether it's him or Bad Bunny, like it's not out of the realm of possibility that Nick Khan would want to try to put together some kind of a special attraction like that. But it's not going to happen. Not going to happen. Honestly, if there was a place for it to happen, it would be right here in NYC. So. But Knight qualifies. They gave LA Knight the Sports Center moment. You know, when this gets replayed this weekend, you're going to see LA Knight raising the arm of Jalen Brunson. He's going to get himself a lot of airtime on ESPN. So good for him. Not a bad spot for him to be in. So now let's game this out a little bit. We've got LA Knight qualifying for Money in the Bank. With that happening, I cannot envision a scenario where Logan Paul does not get involved in that ladder match and screw LA Knight out of the briefcase. I can't even conceive that he doesn't get involved in some way. If that happens, you can't do two screw job spots in the same match because the other potential screw job involves Drew McIntyre and CM Punk. And that was the question I was talking about during the Raw review on Monday night. There were two ways to go with that. Drew McIntyre came out on TV and said he's going to qualify for money. Well, he doesn't even want to qualify. He just wants to be in it. And Adam Pearce put him in a match. It's going to take place on Raw this coming Monday. It'll be Drew McIntyre, Sheamus, and Ilya Dragunov, which, fuck me. I mean, that's going to be an unbelievable match. Originally, it was going to be Ludwig Kaiser in the spot that Ilya Dragunov is in. Kaiser apparently got hurt, legit, on Monday, so Dragunov was the sub, which honestly, and I like Kaiser, but that makes the match even better. But let's assume that McIntyre, of course, is going to qualify. Two potential paths here. McIntyre wins Money in the Bank, and then he said he's going to cash in that night. So then Punk comes out, screws him out of the title, failed cash in, thanks to CM Punk. Or you can just have Punk get involved in the ladder match, push the ladder over, and stop him from even winning the briefcase. If they're going to do something like that with LA Knight and Logan Paul, you can't do it with Drew McIntyre and CM Punk in the same match. You just can't. This makes it more likely, to me, that Drew McIntyre is going to win Money in the Bank. And Drew McIntyre is going then to cash in, or attempt to cash in, later in the show, and he will fail when CM Punk gets involved. And that will be the catalyst for Punk and McIntyre, finally, one-on-one at SummerSlam. So I think that makes that more likely that McIntyre is going to win briefcase. They had a very nice video package for Sika of the Wild Samoans, who passed away this week, father of Roman Reigns. He got Sika chants from the crowd after the video was over. Sika had several matches himself at Madison Square Garden during his career.
Off is a direction you can fuck.
Speaking of the Samoans, there's one right there with a big potty mouth. Hey, Griga, thank you for the $23 drop. Always good to see Griga. Always good to see all of you here on a Friday night. Can't think of a better way to end the week. Let's talk about one final Money in the Bank qualifying match. This one with Naomi, Indy Hartwell, and Blair Davenport. There was a rope-assisted pile driver by Naomi that took Hartwell out, basically like the heat seeker that MJF does. But she managed to recover. Indy sent Davenport into the steel steps outside. Jade Cargill comes strolling down to the ring after what happened to her earlier in the show. Remember when Indy Hartwell came out and sent her face first into the ring post? So here comes Jade looking for a measure of revenge. And Naomi ended up getting the win after hitting the Bubba Bomb to Indy, because Indy got taken out by Jade outside. Put back in the ring, and again, triple threat match, it doesn't matter, even if the referee sees what's going on, because there are no disqualifications in a triple threat match. And we've been getting a lot of them lately. Maybe too many of them. They did this a few months ago, I think, even with the King and Queen of the Ring stuff. They love their triple threat matches. Rolls Indy back inside, Naomi hits the Bubba Bomb, rolls her up for the pin, and I don't know if you noticed, you people, I'm sure you noticed, but even gave Indy a little smack on the ass after she pinned her. As if pinning her was not humiliating enough, she smacked her ass when the match was over, just for added effect, just to add insult to injury. So Naomi is going to Money in the Bank. I thought this was an average match at best. This was the weakest of all three qualifying matches on the show. It just didn't click for me. Naomi feels like the right choice here. Indy Hartwell is not, you know, in a position to be in that spot in Money in the Bank. And Davenport is too new. I mean, I believe this was her first match on SmackDown. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I believe this was Blair Davenport's first match here on SmackDown. She's not going to Money in the Bank. She just debuted. So Naomi was the correct choice for this. SmackDown is in Toronto next week, because next Saturday is Money in the Bank. So they're doing SmackDown in the building the night before. DIY is finally getting their shot. They've been building to this for a while. It will be DIY challenging Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano, challenging Grayson Waller and Austin Theory for the WWE Tag Team titles in Toronto, in the same place, the same city where they won the NXT Tag Team titles from the Revival at TakeOver. That was a long time ago. That was 2016. That was one of the greatest matches still to this day in NXT history. And they mentioned that here in this backstage segment. Byron Saxton was interviewing them, and Ciampa brought that up. Toronto's the place where we won the NXT Tag Team titles. So Austin Theory showed up, and said, I haven't forgotten about what you said and what you did to me, because he's been missing for a couple of weeks. And Gargano was still trying to explain, still trying to talk some sense into Austin Theory. And of course, Gargano and Theory, they have a lot of history together from their NXT days. And Gargano is trying to explain to him, look, Waller does not care about you at all. He's using you just to keep those titles. And before he can get another word out, he got attacked from behind by Grayson Waller, who laid out Gargano, and then Theory pulled him away. So that match is taking place on the show next week. I thought they would save it for SummerSlam, being in Cleveland. I think that's where Gargano is from. I thought maybe they would want to wait. Plus, you know, you do a tag team title match at SummerSlam. The title should be defended anyway. They're doing it in Toronto. I think there's a very good chance they will do a title change next week. It's always possible that the champs retain. They run it back at SummerSlam. But I think we may be getting new tag team champions in 1 week's time. And Toronto would be the perfect place for it, given the history that DIY has there. They close the show. This was the highlight of the night. The main event. The Bloodline acknowledgement ceremony. They all come out to the ring. Paul Heyman starts out with his usual spiel. Solo Sikoa cuts him off, though, before he can finish. And the fans are chanting, we want Roman. These people want Roman Reigns. Every week, the chants get louder. We want Roman. We want Roman. It's building. That's why I say, when it finally happens, oh, roof's going to come off the place. Solo cuts him off, takes the microphone away from him, and he introduces the newest member of the Bloodline, the Samoan Werewolf. My enforcer, he says, Jacob Fatu. So he lied. He lied to Paul Heyman. He told Paul to his face, he's not here. He's not going to be here. And the first thing that Solo does, he introduces Jacob Fatu. So this was a bad omen for Paul Heyman here in this segment. So Fatu got his own entrance, which again is great. Separate and apart from the rest of the Bloodline. Second week in, he gets his own entrance. He's got music already. Now look, the majority of WWE music these days is very generic. It's one of the biggest problems I have with the product is the music. For every good Def Rebel theme, like Roman Reigns, that's a Def Rebel theme, right? It's not like they don't have some good themes. For every good theme, there's four bad ones. And music is such an important part of your presentation, especially in this company. They're all about presentation. They have five match pay-per-views because half the pay-per-views are spent on presentation. And entrances and crowd shots. This company is all about presentation. So more so in WWE than anywhere else, the music is such an important part of things here. And it's so bad for so many people. As far as generic themes are concerned, this one wasn't bad. The music wasn't bad. The entrance itself, they dimmed the lights. They had flames shooting up. You know, he's got that wolf, the werewolf as his logo. His t-shirt, by the way, with that werewolf logo on it, he debuted 1 week ago. Okay, 7 days ago, this man debuted on SmackDown. By Monday, his t-shirt was already in the top five merch sellers on WWE Shop. Jacob Fatu came in at number five on a list that included CM Punk and Stone Cold Steve Austin and Jey Uso. There was Jacob Fatu. Okay, that's pretty impressive. And not for nothing, the logo is pretty badass. So he comes out, again, this guy's in the best shape of his entire life, and he just, the way he carries himself and everything, he looks like a scary motherfucker. He may be out there as Solo's enforcer, and I could definitely see this guy as an enforcer. I'm not saying he's not believable as an enforcer, but playing second fiddle to somebody else, this is not going to be a role that is long-term for Jacob Fatu, because this guy is a star. So now they're all in the ring together. And the first thing that Solo Sikoa tells everybody to do is, here in Madison Square Garden, is acknowledge him. Of course, they don't want to do. He calls his right-hand man, Tama Tonga, step forward. Tells him to acknowledge him, which he does. Then he calls for the infamous Tongaloa, as I sit here wondering what is so infamous about this man. Maybe some of his matches in New Japan. But what is so infamous about Tongaloa? I'm not sure. But he asks him to step forward, and he does. And he, too, acknowledges Solo Sikoa. Then he calls forward his enforcer, Jacob Fatu, to acknowledge him, which he did. This is our first time hearing from Jacob Fatu. He says, I love you, and I acknowledge you. And then Solo turns to Paul Heyman. And Paul Heyman is standing there. He looks like he wants to be anywhere but where he is right now. He's already been lied to, right? He was told Jacob Fatu is not going to be here. And there he is. And he's outnumbered. And Solo tells Paul Heyman, this is your one chance to live. So let's see here. This escalated quickly. Because in the back earlier, Solo was being very nice to him. And he said, you're my wise man. And tonight, we're going to make it official. We went from that in hour one to here at the end of the show, I'm going to give you one chance to live. He tells Heyman to acknowledge him. And he had Tongaloa hand him the Ulafala necklace, which he had like in a bag. And Heyman sees this and he's shocked. I mean, he is in tears. And he wants to know, where did you get that from? Right? That belongs to Roman Reigns. Only Roman Reigns should be wearing that. So now he's got the Ulafala in his hand. He wants Paul Heyman to acknowledge him as his tribal chief. Heyman, again, in tears, or nearly in tears. Solo is standing there with his arms outstretched. Heyman has the Ulafala. He wants him to present it to him and place it over his neck. Heyman tells Solo, I love you, and I acknowledge that you are not my tribal chief. And Madison Square Garden came unglued for this. To say this got the biggest reaction of anything on the show, including Jalen Brunson, would be an understatement. This place exploded when he said that line. And Heyman just had a look on his face like, again, he accepted his fate because he knew what that meant. He knew that he was about to get killed. But he is so loyal to Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns, remember in the storyline, Roman Reigns is the one who rescued him. Paul Heyman was gone. He was off television. He had nobody left. And it was Roman Reigns who rescued him. When Brock Lesnar lost to Drew McIntyre at the WrestleMania in the warehouse back in 2020, that was it. It was Roman who took him in. It was Roman who rescued him and saved him. So he has this enormous debt of gratitude towards Roman Reigns where he just cannot betray his trust. And so he says, I cannot do that. I cannot acknowledge you. So Solo Sikoa then gives him a Samoan spike. And down goes Paul Heyman. And now Solo is looking down at him and he's yelling at him and he's you know, and he's struggling for air, and he's yelling at Heyman, I tried, I love you, I tried. He calls for Jacob Fatu to head up top. Fatu comes off the top rope with a flying headbutt to Heyman. That's two bumps. Then they drag Heyman over to the ropes. Fatu goes outside. He starts clearing off the announce desk. And Tama Tonga and Tongaloa are fighting for their lives as they attempt to pick Paul Heyman. Now, Paul Heyman, he's a heavy guy. Okay, he's put on a lot of weight, and they are struggling to get this man up. And they finally get him up for Jacob Fatu to hold him. They're going to do the triple powerbomb spot. And Jacob Fatu, I mean, he's got all of Paul Heyman right in his face, okay? And he's holding Paul Heyman up. And he power bombs him through the announce desk. And Paul Heyman is left face down on the ground. He took a hell of a bump. You know, for Heyman, that's a pretty hellacious bump to take. And he's laid out face down on the ground. They gave him the Shield triple power bomb. Fox muted the audio for a good 10 seconds as Fatu placed the Ulafala around Solo Sikoa's neck. and the bloodline stood tall over the broken body, over the bones of Paul Heyman, raising up their fingers in the air to close out the show. Now, at least here, I would imagine the reason that they were muting the audio is because the crowd was probably chanting, "Fuck you, Solo." So, at least that I can understand. Of course, that doesn't explain the butchering of the rest of this episode. Seriously, this was as bad, and we've seen Fox do this now almost weekly for months and months and months. They did it a lot when The Rock was around, because The Rock, he doesn't give a shit. The Rock will come out on SmackDown. He doesn't care if it's cable. He doesn't care if it's broadcast network TV. He'll come out. He'll say, "Fuck this, fuck you." He'll talk about crackheads and whores and all kinds of stuff. That I could understand. But this was as bad as I have ever seen it. And despite that, this was an excellent episode of SmackDown. This is one of the best episodes of SmackDown all year. Not a lot of wrestling, even though we had three qualifying matches for Money in the Bank. There wasn't a ton of wrestling on this show. It was very heavily driven by story, especially the bloodline stuff, because that was a thread that, you know, progressed throughout the entire show. But when you have stories and you have, you know, feuds and programs that are strong enough, like WWE has at the moment, you know, they have a lot of good things going on, whether it's McIntyre and Punk, or whether it's the bloodline stuff, or the Liv Morgan story, or the Chad Gable stuff, whatever it may be. Creatively right now, they are firing mostly on all cylinders, right? Not everything is a win, but they're very strong right now. And when you put together a show like this, which was very entertaining, it doesn't have to be a bunch of banger matches to have a great show. And this was one of those weeks where it just felt like everything clicked, everything connected, everything made sense, everything progressed towards Money in the Bank next weekend. And the key angles and the key segments on this show were home runs. I thought they opened the show hot. They closed the show hot. That was a great angle to close out that show. Of all the Money in the Bank matches, the one I had the most fun with was the LA Knight one. For the match itself and also all the shenanigans with the outside players, that was the most fun of all the matches that we had on this show tonight. But as far as the closing angle is concerned, again, I want to give props to them for the Solo Sikoa stuff, because I am not, and I don't want to sit here and say that I'm sold. Now I'm sold on Solo Sikoa as the leader of this new bloodline. It's not a role that suits him very well, but tonight was a big improvement from what we've gotten out of him. He was very assertive. He was very, well, I mean, obviously this is a violent beatdown on Paul Heyman, but this was as good as he has looked in the leadership position since they started doing this angle after WrestleMania. So I thought Solo was great on this show. Fatu is going to be a major player. I've been saying it. You could just tell by looking at this guy. This guy is going to be a fucking big-time player in this company for years to come. When we get the eventual Fatu-Roman Reigns match, I mean, that's going to be huge. That could be a future WrestleMania match right there. Paul Heyman has carried this thing almost single-handedly since WrestleMania. He has been fantastic throughout this entire thing. And again, the monster reaction to that line, it just goes to show you, though, right? All these segments with him being very timid and tears welling up in his eyes, and he'll be in the ring or in a backstage segment with Kevin Owens, and it's almost like he's a hostage. And he's, through his eyes, he's trying to communicate, like, "Help me," to this other, or he'll just straight up say, "Help me." Or he told CM Punk, "Take me with you." Remember that? "Take me with you." You need those segments. You need to have those segments over a period of weeks to build to a moment like this in order for it to work as well as it did. That's why the Sami Zayn chair shot on Roman Reigns at the Royal Rumble last year worked so well. That thing progressed over months. People were waiting for, they were dying for Sammy finally to see the light and wake up. Kevin Owens telling him, "Dude, they're using you. Wake up." You need segments like that to get to a moment like this. And when you get it, and you get that kind of reaction from the crowd, it's got to be so satisfying. You know, if you're WWE, if you're the people involved, if you're Heyman, if you're Triple H, it's got to be very satisfying to get that kind of validation. And now we move to the next part of the story, because now Heyman is out of the picture, right? We're not going to see Heyman now for a little while. Now we head into Money in the Bank. Money in the Bank next weekend is a six-man tag. They still have not clarified which three members of the Bloodline are going to be wrestling in that match. I believe it'll be Solo and the Gorillas of Destiny. I don't think we're going to see Jacob Fatu in the ring just yet. He's in the graphic, but they're all in the graphic, right? But there's four of them. I don't think he'll be one of the four wrestling at Money in the Bank. And, you know, we've heard a lot about whether or not he can travel out of the country. I'm not even sure if he'll be there. So they're doing that match, them against Cody and Randy and KO in Toronto next week in Money in the Bank. As much as I would love to see Roman Reigns come back on that show or at the end of that show, I don't think it's going to happen yet. Because I think when we see Roman Reigns, I think it's going to be with Paul Heyman. I can picture it now. It may be a case where Heyman walks out first and then steps aside and turns, and then we hear the music, and then out comes Roman Reigns, and they come back together. And if that's the case, SummerSlam is more likely than Money in the Bank. I would love for it to be next weekend, but now it almost feels too quick because I don't know that Roman comes back without Paul Heyman. And you're not going to keep Heyman out for 1 week. But at Money in the Bank, I could see somebody else coming back to get revenge, and that's Jimmy Uso. Now, when Jimmy Uso got taken out by Solo and Tama Tonga a couple months ago, there were reports that he was legitimately injured, and that's why they were taking him off TV. I don't know how true that was or is. I don't know if he is hurt or what. I haven't heard anything about him having any kind of injury. Let's assume that's not the case, that he wasn't hurt or hurt badly. We could see Jimmy Uso return in Money in the Bank next weekend, right? He was left for dead by the Bloodline. Maybe we get Jimmy first, and then they save Roman and Heyman for SummerSlam. Especially if we get Cody and Solo for the WWE title, then the only reason that match would even be happening at SummerSlam is if it's setting up for a Roman Reigns return at the very end of the show. So if we get that title match in August in Cleveland, then we know that's the return date for Roman Reigns. That's how I see that playing out. Now, I look ahead even a little bit further than that. We have four men now on the side of Solo Sikoa. We have Solo, we have Jacob Fatu, we have Tama Tonga, and we have Tongaloa. On the opposing side, we assume we're going to get Roman reunited at some point with Jimmy and Jay. That's three. Who's number four? We've heard that they've trademarked the name for someone, you know, Tala Tonga, who's probably going to end up being Hikuleo, who just left New Japan recently. Hikuleo is likely on his way into WWE very soon. The thing is, you know, if he's going to come in and be part of this, then why wouldn't he be? I can't imagine him not being on the side of his Tongan brothers. So are we going to see a situation at some point in these next few months where Solo Sikoa can't control Jacob Fatu? Fatu takes over from Solo. Solo is forced to go crawling back to the OGs, and we get the OG Bloodline against Fatu and the Tongans. That seems a lot less likely now after what they did tonight because they beat the shit out of Paul Heyman. They left him for dead. Fatu is the one who came off the top rope with a headbutt and powerbombed him through the announce desk. What sense now would it make for him to end up on the side of Roman Reigns and Paul Heyman and the Usos? So that just seems less likely to me now. Some people have suggested, well, what about Sami Zayn? Sami Zayn was an honorary Us for a while. He's still good friends with Jey Uso. Maybe Jey goes to Sami and says, look, Sami, I need to ask you for a favor. And are we setting up maybe for a War Games match at Survivor Series with Roman and the Usos and Sami Zayn against Solo and Fatu and, you know, G.O.D.? I don't know. I don't know. There's so many players involved now. I'm not 100% sure exactly what the layout is going to end up being. And maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that's a good thing that we don't know exactly where this is going to go as far as that goes. But they've got this shit mapped out. I guarantee you they've got this shit mapped out beyond WrestleMania next year. if there's one storyline that they have sat down and plotted out, probably with Roman and The Rock, it's the Bloodline story. They have got this mapped out through at least WrestleMania 41. So they know where all the pieces are going to fall. Because this right here, this is their A number one story. This is going to get the most focus. This is going to get the most attention. I don't know how many more people are going to be introduced into this. Frankly, I think at Fatu, they should stop. I mean, how many more people are you going to add before you just start, it starts working against you, right? You could get to a point where it's like the NWO. It's like, all right, we don't need any more members. I feel like Fatu, that should be the cutoff, you know, for now. But this Bloodline story, which was just sort of running off fumes for a while after WrestleMania, the addition of Fatu and the angle tonight, I mean, it has breathed new life into this story. And what we saw tonight to close out the show was excellent storytelling. And now, when Heyman and Roman come back, we're off to the races. So I thought this was an excellent show. And so did you, apparently, because right now, as I speak, in the Twitter poll, with almost 1,500 votes in so far, almost 90% of you have given this show a thumbs up. 88.8% thumbs up, 6.4% thumbs in the middle, and just shy of 5% thumbs down. Anyway, you guys can go vote at Solomonster. Let me know what you thought of this SmackDown show tonight. Hey, Owen Curtis, let me go back to the early Super Chats here. What did you guys think of this SmackDown show tonight? Want to hear from you. Turning this show over to you. We got some that came in early here. They're not listed. Let's go through these. Owen Curtis kicking us off with a couple of Super Chats. Would you prefer Cody enter Mania as challenger or champion? If challenger, when and how do you see him dropping the belt? Well, I mean, I could say Randy Orton, but we already know it's going to be Cody and Rock, most likely, at WrestleMania. So I would say entering as champion is most likely. But when the match with Randy Orton happens, I think Orton should be the one to beat him for the belt, especially if Orton goes heel. The only question then is, how long does Randy hold the belt for before Cody gets it back? I just can't imagine they take that belt off before we get Cody and Rock. Jamie Dorsch, what is your favorite Undertaker casket match? My favorite Undertaker casket match, you know, it's tough because I don't think Undertaker has ever had what I would consider to be a great casket match. I think the best casket match that I remember in WWE, it may have been the Daniel Bryan Kane casket match they had on SmackDown. I remember that being a really good match. For Undertaker, though, I might just say Undertaker and Yokozuna from the Royal Rumble in 94, just because that's the one that always stands out to me. I don't know if I'd call that his greatest, though. But to me, that's the most memorable. I was never a fan of the one that he had with Shawn Michaels at the Royal Rumble in 98. I don't even know why they did that match, other than they just wanted to get him in a casket so they could set it on fire at the end of the show. That's really why they did it. They wanted the visual of Kane after he turned on his brother, putting him in the casket and setting it on fire. The title match on that show should have been Shawn Michaels and Owen Hart. So, I know some people love that match. I was never really a big fan of it. The Winston Slip. Clue is one of the best movies ever. Rest in peace, Martin Mull. It's not one of the best ever, but I used to watch Clue. It was a good movie. Bobby's World with the $10 Super Chat. Hey, Bobby, thank you. Can you fly, Bobby? Don't worry too much about confusing Destiny's Child and TLC. They're basically the same thing. After my girlfriend sees this, please prepare for my funeral shortly thereafter. I'll build you a plot right next to Paul Heyman after tonight's show. Sidro, guess Heyman got his wish as he told Punk, take me with you, and now they both are in side-by-side beds at the hospital. Good ending. That's right. See, he got what he wanted. He got exactly what he wanted. Owen Curtis with another super chat. Also, not having any men's tag team titles defended on the PLEs between Mania and SummerSlam is weak sauce. Hopefully one is added for Money in the Bank, but not optimistic. Well, we're not getting a WWE tag team title match of Money in the Bank because they're doing it the night before. And the other tag titles, they're not going to be on the line on that show either. So you're not getting a tag team title match of Money in the Bank. SummerSlam, yes, there has to be at least one. They split the titles. We have two sets of tag team titles again, which is totally unnecessary, but they did it. SummerSlam is the second biggest show of the year. And you're not going to have at least one of those tag team titles defended? That would be ridiculous. So Money in the Bank, no, it's not going to happen. SummerSlam, it should. I wish I could tell you that it will, but I don't know if it will or not. Raph, again, we're still going through the early ones here before we get to the ones on screen. Raph, super stoked that I have tickets for the next Raw. My first time going in person. Any suggestions on what to do or look out for while I am there? Aside from having fun, thank you for rekindling my love of wrestling. Hey, Raph, thank you very much for that. Yeah, I have a suggestion. Bringing a sound-off sign is never a bad thing, especially if you got seats that are going to be visible on camera. Look, go to the show, have fun. That's my advice. That's it. You're going to sit through 3 hours of Raw. I would hope that you would have fun doing it, but there really is no other advice that I can give you. Just keep an eye out if you see any fellow SoundOff fans. Say hello. We always have a few that end up at these shows every week. The Real CS has a couple of super chats here. The countdown for the return of the Real Tribal Chief has officially started. Yes, it has. And in terms of all the names that came from them, do you think the Anoa'i Fatu family is the most influential family in professional wrestling? Cannot think of any other not named McMahon. The only one I could think of would be the Harts, because there were so many kids and then so many people married into the family, and Stu, the Dungeon, you know, all the people he trained. It's got to be one of those two. You know, you have the Guerrero family, you had the Von Erich family. There's so many wrestling families, but none have been as influential, I would say, outside of the McMahons, as those two, right? It's got to be the Harts or the Samoans, you know, the Anoa'i family. Aaron with the $20 super chat. Great angle to end the show when Roman returns to confront this current bloodline, the crowd reaction is going to be astronomical. Jacob comes off as such a bigger star than Solo. Solo isn't bad, but Jacob just has the it factor. And he says also, can't wait till they're off Fox. The constant blackouts were absolutely awful. Yeah, and look, I want to address the Solo thing here, because there are some people who have said, why do you hate Solo so much? And I say, I don't hate Solo. I mean, we share a namesake, right? I'm Solo, he's Solo. But no, I don't. It's not that I hate Solo Sikoa. I don't hate Solo Sikoa. I'm just stating facts. And the fact of the matter is, Jacob Fatu is better at this moment in every way than Solo Sikoa is. That's it. In terms of in-ring, in terms of what I've heard from him on promos, in terms of his just overall presentation and his overall, like when he comes out, he looks like a star. He feels like a star. He's got that intensity to him. He just is the total package in a way that Solo Sikoa is not. Now, maybe one day he will be. Maybe one day he can be. He's not. It doesn't mean that he's bad or I hate him. It just means that this guy over here is better than he is. So I don't want people thinking I hate Solo Sikoa. There are people I hate. Solo Sikoa is not one of them. David Thering with the $51 super chat. That's the coal tar. Why do I hate myself? I don't. See, that's the thing. How could I hate Solo, man? I don't hate myself. David says, how's it going, Solo? That ending tonight for SmackDown was effing awesome. It's making Roman's eventual return with Paul even more epic. My annoyance with black screens and them cutting the volume in spots reached an all-time high tonight. Yeah, it kills the moment, you know, when you have something going on screen and then they just mute the sound for 15 seconds straight and black out the screen. And you've got people thinking, wait, did my feed go out? What's going on here? But like, sometimes they'll do that and the reactions, you can't, like if it's a loud reaction, they come back and now it's over and it's like it ruins the show. There are parts of the show that it actually ruins. And the quicker they can get off Fox, the better. Look, it's not like USA doesn't also mute the audio, and that's annoying too. They'll go in and out with the muting. So I'm not sure which is worse, to be honest with you. I think that might be worse. But they're not nearly as bad as Fox is. Fox fucking sucks. I mean, it fucking sucks. So the quicker they can get off, the better. The Juliet says, rest in peace, Martin Mull. That's our second Martin Mull super chat of the night. Josiah Ball, thank you for the learning tree. Mike Witt with the five. That pop when Roman, Jay, and Jimmy reunite is going to be monstrous. Imagine if Paul asks a certain beast for help. Roman and Usos versus the Bloodline. So, interesting. Pitching Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar on the same side to take on the new Bloodline. Now I'm just imagining Brock Lesnar and Jacob Fatu in the ring together. I like it. I don't think it's going to happen, but I like it. Arby with the 12. Mets win. SmackDown was awesome. Brunson getting love as the Knicks get better. Seeing Solomonster in chat excited makes me happy. And Shingo is on my TV. What a Friday. Praise Grimace and F Fox. So is Shingo on Rampage tonight? Yeah, we got Shingo and Brian Danielson on Sunday. See, so we have something to look forward to this weekend. I know I am. Alex with the $22 Super Chat. Brother Solo, that's me. Yes, Alex, what's going on? Do you think SummerSlam will still follow the five-match card tradition? Considering it is one of the bigger pay-per-views, how do you think they will space out the matches to prevent a five-hour pay-per-view? I don't think it's going to be five matches. I think it'll be six or seven. That would be my prediction. I think SummerSlam will be at least half a dozen matches, or somewhere in the six to eight range, maybe with one on the kickoff show. You got to do it up bigger than you would your standard pay-per-view, like a Clash at the Castle or a Backlash, because it really is. I mean, they really promote it as the second biggest show of the entire year. And it's not two nights yet. WrestleMania is two nights, so it has a lot more matches. You got to have at least six matches at SummerSlam, if not maybe seven. That's what I see. They're not going to overload it with 10 matches, but they're not going to do five. The Joker's voice with the $10 says, hail Solomonster, the new writer for SmackDown is earning his paycheck. Finally, Stratton back on TV and just book it. Tiffy time equals Ms. Money in the Bank. Try and get that pink briefcase ready. Yeah, there is a new head writer for SmackDown. What was his name? I don't have his name in front of me, but he just started last week. So, not a bad way to start out. I think most of the show was already written before he was anointed as the new head writer, but not a bad start for the new head writer of SmackDown. BR says, fuck Fox. Absolutely. Yeah, Forbidden Door on Sunday has 13 matches, I believe is the total. It's either 13 or 14. I think it's 13. I think it's 13. So, I mean, it's an AEW pay-per-view, so it's no surprise there. NWO Matt, Solo, SmackDown was great. Here is your learning tree. Thank you, Matt. Alfonso with the $9.99. Thank you, Fox, for ruining such a great segment and the whacking of one Paul Heyman. Can't wait for them to leave. Roman is coming. RB with the 12. I will confess I would wear high heels for ankle stability after an ankle sprain or injury as well as calf building. Hey, RB, you do you, brother. Whatever works for you. Whatever works for you. Griga, thanks, Solo, for your hard work. They give me stuff to listen to at work. Cheers. You know, I got a lot of people who are bored at work, and so they listen to the sound up, or they watch the streams. They stream from wherever they are. I always love hearing that. You know, work sucks. I work all the time. I wish I didn't have to work so hard. So I know work can be boring sometimes. So you always have the sound off to keep you company. Kevin Dunn's Bieber. Bloodline story is putting food on families. Fuck Fox. I got that reference. I got that reference. The Joker's voice. Great. Indian Candace against Bianca and Jade again. Ugh. Well, what do you expect, man? They have no division. There's no real tag team division. So this is what you end up with. Scott Woodford says, hi, guys. The Juliet Nakamura will be in the corner of a UFC fighter at UFC 303 this weekend. Also, congrats to Buddy Murphy and Rhea Ripley on their marriage. Yes, Rhea Ripley is officially taken. Not that you had a chance, but she is officially taken. And Nakamura will be UFC 303, but Conor McGregor will not be. Interesting. Yes, John Swakata is his name. That's right. You know, when I first read who the new writer, the head writer for SmackDown was, I had to do a double take. I said, wait, did I read that right? I said, oh no, okay. I was a little worried there. Oz and Glorious, much love, Solo Branch. Thanks, guys. Yeah, you're very welcome, Oz. NWO Matt with a learning tree. We love the learning tree. Do we, though? Do we? David Thiering with the 23. Fox really butchered the shit out of that Paul versus Knight versus Escobar match with all of the black screens and mics getting cut. As has been, I cannot wait for WWE programming to get off of Fox. Carry on, Solo. Only a few more months. Trey Marquis, what's up, Solo? I'm turning 30 on Monday, and I gotta say, I am blessed to make it. Also, had to stop by and show love. Trey, I hope you have a very happy birthday. It's coming up here on July 4th week. And I thank you for the 12. And here's the 30, and at least 30 more. M. Mills with the $100 super chat.
Oh my god, a super chat bomb. That's a bigger bomb than the New York Mets.
Now, even though they won, apparently they won tonight. $100 bomb. M. Mills laying it down. Javier 316. Hey, Solo, just showing some love for all the wrestling content you provide. Patiently waiting for the return of our tribal chief. As am I. It's going to make for great television when it finally happens. El Masse with the 12. Seeing that old man on stage made me sick. He can barely walk, barely talk. America has moved past the need for him. It is time to write off Jericho from Dynamite. You know what? I agree. I agree. I mean, for God's sakes, Jericho's out there and, you know, that voice, and he loses his train of thought, and it was awful. It was awful to watch. It was a disaster. And you're absolutely right. The quicker we get him off TV, the better. Raph, idea, plant a tree for every learning tree donation. I'm telling you, man, we could single-handedly solve the problem of all the trees that are being cut down. Yeah, we need trees for oxygen in this world. We could single-handedly save the world. Which would be ridiculous, because then Chris Jericho, he would never shut up. he would take credit for it and say, see, I saved the world. Along with all of his other great accomplishments. Ragnarok, TGIF, brother, how would you book Jay giving a damn enough to rejoin Jimmy and Roman after everything they did to him? It would not be very hard at all. They're family. They're blood. It would not be very hard at all. And they're twins. When you're twins, you have a bond unlike any other. And if Jimmy came back to him hat in hand, and I'm not sure if that's the way it's going to work or if Jay will simply show up one day because his brother needs him, but his brother said, look, you know, look, bygones be bygones, I apologize, but I can't do this without you. Look what's going on here. Look what's going on in the family. We need you. We need the yeet. Jay's going to give him a hug, and that's going to be the end of it. They're going to be back together. It's not going to be very difficult. Alex with the 22 says, after the show went off the air, Cody came out and asked Kayla Braxton to come out, and she thanked everybody and celebrated her last day. I don't know why they don't do these small but powerful segments.
Do you feel him, sir?
Live on the air. Well, I can understand that not being on the air. There's only so much time they have. Plus, you know, Fox probably would have blacked out the entire segment anyway, so we wouldn't have seen it regardless. But you know what they should do? And AEW does this. Or they used to do it. Because I know when CM Punk was there, sometimes he would do these promos after the show, and they take the whole segment and they put it on their YouTube channel. So hopefully WWE will do the same. Hopefully they'll take the Kayla stuff and they'll put it on social media so we could see it. The Juliet. Three NXT wrestlers showed up at the TNA tapings tonight. Izzy Dame, Charlie Dempsey, and Miles Bourne. Also, JR says he'll be at Forbidden Door this weekend. Yeah, JR was back in the hospital only a few days ago and obviously is doing well enough that he is planning on being in New York, if he's not already in New York, for Forbidden Door. So we should be seeing him on the show, at least doing commentary for some of the matches on Sunday, which will be nice. That he's well enough to even do it is a good sign, because he's had a lot of breathing problems recently. So that's good news. And I did see that there were some NXT names at the TNA tapings. Obviously, you can see what massive stars showed up there. But no, they are NXT talent, so it does count. The Real CS, would you have Solo pin Cody at Money in the Bank, which leads to Cody and Solo at SummerSlam? I wouldn't even do Cody and Solo at SummerSlam, but if they're going to do it, then it would make sense for Solo to get a pin on Cody. Because he ain't going to beat Cody at SummerSlam. He ain't winning the title. That'll be the only time he pins Cody Rhodes. But look, if that's the match they're going to do, if they're setting up for Roman to come back at SummerSlam, then yeah, I think Solo should pin Cody at Money in the Bank. Colin C. with the 10. What's the name of those upper thigh / butt cheek straps the women are wearing nowadays? The first time I saw them were in AEW with Anna Jay, Ty Mello, and Sky Blue wearing them. How the hell am I supposed to know? Do you think I wear them to sleep every night? I have no idea. Maybe somebody in the chat could help out here. The upper thigh butt cheek straps that women are wearing. What are they called? They're called straps. Colin, I wish I could help you, but I don't know. I could ask you why you need to know, or maybe I don't want to know. Alexander. Alexander. I'm supposed to know these things. Look, I know a lot of things, but there are certain things I don't know. And, yeah, there you go. Will says he just calls them booty straps. That sounds about right. garter belt like at a wedding, but higher. Alexander says, now that Paulie is no longer the wise man for Solo, what if Solo brings in Haku as his new wise man? I don't need to see that. I don't need to see it. Now we're getting, I think, a little ridiculous here. I don't need to see Haku or any of the elder statesmen. It's enough. What we have now is enough. I understand that a couple of his sons are in the faction, so in a way it would kind of make sense, but I don't know that I could handle that much badassery with Haku and Jacob Fatu sharing the ring, sharing the screen together every week. I think that would be too much. DJ Blind. Heyman is going to return with Roman like Paul Bearer returned with Kane back in 2000. Solo Monster, you are the best. Shout out Walter, Barry, and Don. DJ, thank you. And shout out to Walter, Barry, and Don. We've got Ghostface. I know you said cool off on the new debuts for the Bloodline Civil War, but how would you fit Zilla Fatu into this story? I wouldn't. He's still so young. I don't think there's a spot for him right now in that story. And I will tell you this. The Bloodline story is going to go on for a very long time. They've set themselves up for probably a couple more years at least of this Bloodline. This Bloodline is not going away. This Bloodline for them is like their golden goose. They could constantly come up with new angles to it and turn people and then bring a new member in here and there. I could absolutely see Zilla being a part of this, but that's honestly a year or two down the road. I mean, he's very young. He's not even, I mean, how long is he even in the business for? He's not ready for a spot like this. Although he will be at the House of Glory show. And I look forward to seeing him on that show. But he's still working his way up. So I think he'll get there, but I just think it's premature to just put him in the story. I just don't think there's a spot for him right now. But yeah, he'll be at High Intensity on July 26th. We have Swerve Strickland coming in, the AEW World Champion, and we got Zilla Fatu making his HOG debut. Hopefully he doesn't hear this, or I may get a spike. I may get spiked on that show. Clamp God. Yo Solo, buy or sell Fox Production Team or BR app? Oh my god. That's like asking me, do I want to get shot or be stabbed? None of the above. But if I had to go one over the other, I go with the Fox Production Team because at least I'm watching SmackDown for free. When I am watching an AEW pay-per-view in the BR app, I'm paying $50 for it. That's if I could get it to work in the beginning at all. So that's worse because I'm actually paying money for that. But they both suck. Hey, Damon Dunbar. Thank you, Damon, for the $5 super chat. Appreciate it. I smoke a lot of weed with the $1.99. Oh my God. Where have you been? Where have you been hiding at? I haven't heard from you in forever. Did you watch the debate last night? Any thoughts? Yeah, it was a fucking disaster. All around. It was an embarrassment. The entire thing. And I'm going to leave it at that. But thank you, I smoke a lot of weed. CNM3443. I'll be at Forbidden Door. I'm going to bring a sound off sign. That's what I like to hear. Now you got to let me know where you're sitting. But yes, anybody who brings a sound off sign, if you get it on camera, I will show it and shout you out here on the stream. I love seeing the sound off represented at these shows. Whether it's international, we've had fan signs all over the world, Saudi Arabia, all over the place. So, CNM, let me know where you're going to be, and maybe we'll see the sound off sign this Sunday. David Therian with the $8 super chat. Per what I am seeing online, AEW Forbidden Door has 10 matches on the main card. Want to guess when the pay-per-view is going to end? I have no clue. It's not going to be until midnight. This is what Tony Khan does. I mean, he loads these things up and he goes right up until the very end. So we're not getting out of the show until at least midnight. Which means if I go live that night, because I'm still planning on going live that night, then it's going to be a late night. Oz and Glorious with the 12. I love how the learning tree has become the Newman to your Jerry. What's the deal with Chris Jericho? Will I be live after Forbidden Door? Right now, the plan is yes. I'll make a final decision on Sunday. I hate these late shows. I really do. I hate them so much. Oh, man. Mike Witt, G.O.D. versus Usos at SummerSlam. SummerSlam. Yeah, by SummerSlam, I can see it. I can see it by SummerSlam. Mike also says, Paul took that bump way better than Tony Khan did. Yeah, Paul Heyman should not be taking bumps like that, but kudos to him for taking it. He got folded up, too, like right on his neck and everything. Ugh. I remember years ago, and we're going back like almost 20 years. Actually, we are going back 20 years, 20 plus years at this point, when every night he was taking that F5, him and Big Show both, they got beat up. Taking F5s from Brock Lesnar every night when Brock was feuding with Big Show. And that was 20 years ago, and Heyman was getting pretty beat up. Now he's 20 years older. Soldier for Truth. Solo will never be a star. Way too boring, SmackDown was. So Soldier was not a fan of SmackDown, and he is not a fan of Solo Sikoa. Oz and Glorious. There's an estimated 2 million ethnic Polynesians worldwide. Surely most of them can throw a super kick barefoot, so this bloodline story will never end. I think you're right. Alex with the 10. Hypothetically speaking, can you see a potential Wyatt faction versus bloodline story way down the road? Well, that's way down the road. So, who's to say? They're on separate brands right now, so I'm going to say no. Anything's possible, but I'm going to say no. Navy, 4181. If Gable won Money in the Bank, how messed up would it be if Sheamus finally won the Intercontinental title at SummerSlam and Gable immediately cashed in and beat Sheamus for it? That would be heartbreaking, is what that would be. But it doesn't look like Gable's chances right now. I think his chances of winning Money in the Bank tonight just went down quite a bit. Jeremy Rose, do you see Heyman bringing Roman and Jimmy back at Money in the Bank? I think Money in the Bank is too... I mean, Heyman just got put through a table tonight and spiked. Money in the Bank is 8 days away. You can't bring him back that quickly. It has to be SummerSlam. And I think Jimmy could be back before then. The Boba Fetts. Do I have a P.O. box? It's not exactly a P.O. box, but I do have a virtual mailbox, which is basically a P.O. box. Email me. I'll get you the information. Just send me an email and put that in the subject line. TheSolomonster@gmail.com. Mikey Clayman. Who is the most accomplished wrestler in kayfabe? Most accomplished? So, I mean, are we just talking championships? Because Jerry Lawler has won like literally 120 something titles. Ric Flair has won a ridiculous number of titles. I think Ric Flair probably, considering how many championships across different territories and promotions and the longevity that he had. I mean, Flair would be in the conversation. I mean, you could expand that out to Inoki and people in other territories and some of the legends in Mexico, El Santo. What are we talking here? I mean, you got to set the parameters. I don't even know how to answer that. Manuel Macias, do you think Roman's babyface turn will overshadow Cody? If that happens, how will it impact Cody? Do you think we will get a heel turn or not? Yeah, I mean, once Roman comes back, it's going to overshadow everything. It's not going to be second fiddle to Cody Rhodes. It's going to overshadow everything. Do I think that leads to a Cody heel turn? No, I don't. CNM, I'm sitting section 102. So right beside the entrance stage on the side the camera points to. Okay. It's a good seat. Isaiah Roca, hear me out, Solo. New wise man for the bloodline, Armando Alejandro Estrada. I don't know what Armando is up to these days. I don't think he's in the wrestling business anymore. I smoke a lot of weed. What's going on, man? Always listens on the download. I don't listen to anybody. Like other podcasts, as far as like non-wrestling podcasts, no. I don't, there's nobody else I listen to. People listen to me. I don't listen to them. That's how, when you're doing this as long as I have, you don't have a lot of time for listening to other people anyway. So, the Juliet says El Fantasmo earned the final Forbidden Door ladder match spot. Yeah, I mean, once I saw who he was wrestling AR Fox tonight, I think I knew it was going to be Fantasmo. So now we have six in the ladder match at Forbidden Door. We have Jack Perry. We have Mark Briscoe. We have Konosuke Takeshita. We have Leo Rush. We have El Fantasmo. And who am I missing? I think that's five. I think I'm missing one. Oh, Dante Martin. So those are your six. And I'm going to be doing Forbidden Door predictions, final predictions for the final card for Forbidden Door on the podcast on Sunday. I'm also going to be doing Money in the Bank predictions because it's coming up next Saturday and I do my show on Sunday. So you're going to get predictions for both pay-per-views on the podcast this weekend. So you will want to tune in for that. And I believe I have gotten through all of your many, many messages, which I love and I appreciate very much. And we are, by the way, we are sitting at 660 likes so far. Can we hit 700 before I get out of here? Hit that thumbs up. Maybe we can do it. All right, let's wrap up this week with a little bit of Be the Booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the Booker.
Throw those fingers in the air for the bloodline. There they are. Actually, throw those fingers up in the air for yours truly. If you're a sound-off soldier, put those fingers up in the air in the chat. All right, Tag Team Be the Booker, a little feature we do here on these streams. I've put together these animations myself. There are many, many teams that are in here. I don't know where it's going to land. We'll see. Maybe we'll land on some kind of special stipulation. We begin. Well, there you go. I love it. Like Joe Hendry. Say his name and he appears. Randy Orton forces Adam Pearce to add a stipulation to your match. So it looks like we've got to add a stipulation before we go any further here. We're getting a stip. I know you guys like that. We're getting a stipulation here. What kind of tag team match are we going to have? Let's see. Wow. Has there ever been a tag team Iron Man match before? I don't think there has been. There has never been a tag team Iron Man match before. Yeah, I never even thought about that. All right, well, that's kind of interesting. Well, let's see. Let's see what it's going to be. We need some good teams here. if these teams are going 60 minutes, then we better come up with a couple of good teams. And we begin here. Well, how about this? After tonight's show, how about this? The Head Shrinkers, Samu, and Fatu. I'm telling you, they're everywhere. These Samoans are everywhere. You can't get away from them. All right, we got the Head Shrinkers, Samoan SWAT team, call them what you want, in a 60-minute Ironman match against the Powers of Pain. I think I would be in pain if I had to watch 60 minutes of that. Now, see, if it was the Powers of Pain and the Head Shrinkers just in a regular match, then I would have given that the belt. For 60 minutes, though, I don't think so. That would be brutal. Now, if we would have landed on the Midnight Express and the Heart Foundation or the Brainbusters and the Rockers, that would be great. I can't take 60 minutes of the Head Shrinkers and the Powers of Pain. I'm sorry. I can't do it. And if you're being honest with yourselves, you can't either. Don't lie. All right, women's be the booker. Jade Cargill. There she is. We got Jade Cargill, who is going to be stepping into the ring with Mariah May. Ah, the lovely Mariah May. Mariah May and Jade Cargill. How's that for a match? You want a marquee match? There it is, right there. Two beautiful ladies who are going to kick each other's ass. And now our main event. Here we go. Main event time. We begin with, Bill Goldberg. It's Billy Boy. Well, you know what? Goldberg has been complaining for the longest time that he never got a proper retirement match. He was lied to by Vince McMahon. He wants to have his retirement match. So I say we should give Goldberg his retirement match tonight. What do you think? In fact, I think we should pick a stipulation for his match. I'm going to give Goldberg the retirement match that he wants. And the match that he's going to have is a scaffold match. This is going to end great. Yeah, this is going to be fantastic. Bill Goldberg in a scaffold match. This should be good. This is going to be very good here. Not with that little smug prick. All right, here we go. I pray we don't land on Bret Hart. Has the man not suffered enough? Can you imagine Bret Hart in a scaffold match with Bill Goldberg? Look what happened to him in a regular match. Bill Goldberg, one-on-one in a scaffold match with... Oh, no! Oh, no! Oh, my God! Oh no, I can't believe that. Why? What did I do to deserve this? Bill Goldberg against me in a scaffold match. I must have been a real prick in a previous life because I can't believe that this is where we land on me in Be the Booker. That's it. I'm going to get my will written. There's no way I'm coming out of this alive. Not after all the shit that I've said about this guy. He's going to fucking Vic Grimes me. He's going to New Jack and Vic Grimes. He's going to throw me right off the thing. I can't believe this. Goldberg and Solomonster is Goldberg's retirement match on a scaffold. Yeah, I bet he would love that. I bet he'd love to throw me off that thing. Fuck Goldberg. I can't believe this. We got some more super chats here. Let's go through your messages. Take my mind off what just happened here. Groovy Goose. What if War Games... I can't believe that happened. What if War Games was used for Money in the Bank, or is that off the table? What if War Games was used for Money in the Bank? I don't understand what you're saying. But whatever it is, I don't like it, so no. No, I would not do that. The Real CS, since it's more than likely we're not getting Rock and Roman at WrestleMania next year, what do you think Roman does? Is it a match with Solo? You know, I would have to think a match with Solo is going to happen before that. If it's not a match with Rock, I'll tell you what, if it's not a match with Rock, I'd rather they do the Solo match maybe even at the Royal Rumble, if not earlier, and do Roman and Jacob Fatu on that show. I really want to see that match. That is a WrestleMania-worthy match. You know, the story may support Roman and Solo more because there's been so much invested in that aspect of the story. But who would I rather see Roman in the ring with? Sign me up for Roman and Fatu, man. Cameron Spencer, is it true that Heyman once owed money to the Mafia in the early 2000s and Vince paid it off for him? I've heard that rumor for years now. Is it true? I've never heard that. So I'm going to say no. That's one of those urban legends. But then again, Heyman owed money to a lot of people. I don't know that the Mafia was one of them. Unless maybe what you heard is that he owed money to Little Guido. And someone misconstrued that as him owing money to the Mafia. Solo main evented? Yeah. I got my main event. Not the main event I was hoping for, though. I want to live when I come out of my main event. I want to be able to enjoy my win. I don't want to be laid up in the hospital with a broken neck and broken legs and broken arms and broken everything. Mike says, next week the seeds are planted for a Bianca turn. I hope so. I'd love to see them start building towards one. And then do Bianca against Jade at SummerSlam. David Wilson, I just laughed my goddamn ass off at Goldberg against Solo. May God help you, Solo. I'm going to need more than that. I'm going to have to talk to Bret. Maybe Bret Hart can mentor me. And he can get me ready for this match. He can teach me all that I need to know. Luis with the $5 says, Luis Alejandro versus the Solomonster inside Hell in a Cell would be a better match than Bill Goldberg against Solomonster in a scaffold match. Now, you know what, Luis? I got an idea. Luis, I want you to be in my corner. You will be my surrogate. And then you can step in there for me. And you can take on Goldberg. I like that. I like that better. I believe in you. Brandon Vasquez. Well, you did fight Goldberg all those times as Tavish. That felt like a 60-minute Iron Man match. That's because I couldn't beat the guy. Me against Goldberg in the Performance Center in 2K23. It was 23, right? Not 24. I couldn't beat him. I couldn't do it. I quit. I couldn't get past it. Ruined the entire game for me. I couldn't do anything else until I beat him, and I couldn't beat him. Groovy Goose, be the Booker main event will be a double retirement match. Basically, yeah. Power Spying Games, poor Solo. First Kali, and now Goldberg. Yeah, why am I always booked with the stiffs? No, remember though, wasn't I booked against Kali in a Punjabi prison match? What the f- Now I get Goldberg in a scaffold match? What do I have, a death wish? Oh, man. Well, I'm glad you're all entertained, because I don't want to see that match. That was a very unique main event, though. I'll say that. Maybe we should lay off the stipulations for a while. Didn't work out too well tonight. We had a good powers of pain in a 60-minute Iron Man match. And then me and Goldberg in a scaffold. I think we're going to put the stipulations on the back burner for now. Anyway, thank you guys for an incredible stream tonight. We had a lot of people in here. I think we topped out somewhere between 1,700 and 1,800. Big SmackDown tonight from Madison Square Garden. Thank you for all the super chats. I hope SmackDown can continue the momentum. Two straight weeks of banger shows. I enjoyed the shows last week and this week. And we have Money in the Bank coming up. They're going to be in Toronto next Friday, right? Those Canadian crowds are usually on fire. So it should be a fun weekend coming up next week. And of course, it should be fun this weekend because we have Sound Off episode 868 and we have Forbidden Door on Sunday night. And that is where I will be most likely. I'll be live as soon as the pay-per-view is over. Talking about Danielson and Shingo, Swerve and Ospreay, and everything in between. So join me then. Hit that subscribe button and that like button on your way out. Leave a comment once we're done here in the comments section. And let me know what you thought of SmackDown. And enjoy your weekend, guys. I will see you for episode 868 on Sunday, covering all the news of the week. Until then, take care, guys.